listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. You can send me a text at 2057. You can email me inbox at realitycheck.radio. This next story I love. Our guest, Mr. Dave Dyack, I keep going on wanting to call him Chris because I had a good friend, Chris Dyack. I have a good friend called Chris Dyack, but I'm going to call him Dave Dyack. He's down in Winton. He's on the local board, and the issue of spending tens of thousands of dollars, not an inconsiderable sum, on CCTV cameras came up. Basically, the snoop on you when you walk down the street in Winton. Well, the local board had some questions, didn't get satisfactory answers, thought it was a lot of money, decided to say no. Unbelievable what then happens. Big hit job from the media, big hit job from the police. Oh, the police call them conspiracy theorists. Just for asking what's going to happen to the information. We've got true troopers here in Winton, and joining us is the Ōrite board member, Dave Dyack. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Rodney. Really nice to be here.
Oh, look, I love the story because it's sort of, there you have this beautiful town, Winton. For listeners, it's down in Southland, just north of Invercargill. Beautiful town, dates from the 1850s. Paradise. And you can't imagine putting snooping cameras down that street. It's like New Zealand used to be in the 1950s to me, Winton. Beautiful place. And when you stand up and ask some questions as a local representative, they come after you like you're the devil incarnate. And that's what Dave and his colleagues on the community board have experienced. And it's a microcosm of what is happening in the world today, where we can't have civilized debate and ask reasonable questions without being damned. That's a summary, is it not, Dave?
Yeah, pretty accurate one too, Rodney, yeah.
Tell us first of all about yourself. How come you live in Winton?
Well, long story, but I've been living in Southland since 1986. I worked at the smelter for 10 years, Enzis down at Awarua, and that was an interesting time. Went through some ups and downs there. One great thing about it was, though, I went from being what they, in those days, they called a baggy ass, which was just a union worker and doing, you know, dirty jobs, and had the opportunity to actually get trained in not only quality systems, their implementation, but also right through to the auditing level at that. So I managed to actually gain some really good skills down there.
So just talking about the smelter, did you enjoy working at the smelter?
I did. Went through there at a really interesting time. That was over the period when individual contracts came into the, you know, onto the market.
Ah, so that was the early 90s?
Yep. I was there from 86 to 96.
Yep.
And the smelter was the first big company by far to go down the individual contract way. They put out a very attractive package to the workforce. They asked the workforce to trust them. And with the first offer they made, they had nearly 90% of the workforce change from unionized to individual contracts. And then about 3 months later, they took the level up into the high 90% of the workforce.
Goodness me.
You know, interesting times. And you know, I think it may have gone backwards a little bit since then, but that's only hearsay.
I've been through the smelter once, and it struck me as an extraordinarily friendly place to work. Everyone seemed to know each other.
Yeah, it was kind of like that, but particularly keep in mind that it's a 24-hour, 365-day-a-year operation, and you do get somewhat isolated into your own crews, the people that you work with.
Yeah.
And you tend to, often your social life tends to revolve around that as well. So hence the friendliness, I think, that you may have seen, yeah.
And it can't shut down because it takes so much power to get the heat up, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, they've done some amazing stuff down there over the years. I mean, not only do they produce, without a doubt, the best, the most high-quality aluminium in the world, they have been absolutely innovative in dealing with things like power shortages and shutting down operations and restarting them, things that were never, ever done previously in the world. There's some very clever and some very good people that work down there, Kiwis and others from overseas.
Because I recall being told that, like, this is an aluminium that goes into ladders. We import that aluminium. This is the best aluminium in the world for highly specialised purposes, right?
Yeah, that's true. They, their aluminium was used in making the wings of the great big Airbus, the A340, the highest spec, and they do good stuff.
So how did you end up in Winton?
Well, eventually it was a case of living in Invercargill with, I must say, terrible weather. The youngest child had headed off to university, and I don't know if it was empty nest syndrome, but it was my wife and I saying, what are we going to do now? And we had no real retirement plan. So we ended up looking for a business to run. And we're very, very lucky to find a cattery and boarding kennels, which we took over 14 years ago and have been doing that ever since. And
oh, wow.
We've both gone past the big 65, and the idea is that we can manage the business to supplement our income and in the retirement years, so we can be as busy or as quiet as we want to be.
Did you have cats and dogs before you took the cattery and doggery business on?
No, mate, I was a complete newbie.
Really? Isn't that great?
Other than being the traditional parents where we had cats, dogs, budgies, goldfish, and all the rest that you do, to look to for your children and that type of thing. And I absolutely love it. In my case, we don't specifically, I do the dogs, my wife does the cats. It's kind of evolved that way, but it's really due down to the fact that when you're working with large dogs, you do need that, the extra strength and authority perhaps that a man brings to the situation. And I don't mean that in a misogynistic way. It's the reality.
Don't have to. We saw that on display at the Olympics. You don't have to explain that at all. You're a Southland man, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Are these dogs and cats that people are going away on holiday and you look after them while they're away?
Largely, but there are other circumstances. We actually, a lot of our business is people going up to Dunedin for hospital visits and things like that, because a lot of the services aren't available down here in Southland. Excuse me. But largely holiday, we run on the tails of the, operate on the tails of the tourism industry. And when that's going well, when people are flush with money, we do all right, And we even have boarders coming in from around the country where people travel with their pets. They want to go and do the Hump Ridge track or something like that. So they'll board their animal with us for a few days while they're away doing that. And quite a variety.
It must be a business where reputation counts, because people love their cats and dogs And they're not just going to leave them at someone they look up in the yellow pages, so to speak. They're gonna want to know that their cat and dog will be well loved.
Well, that's true. And interestingly, when we took over the place, we did advertise yellow pages and that sort of thing, but it got incredibly, insanely expensive to do that. So we dropped right out, and we rely on word of mouth and continued support, you know, referrals and that type of thing. We do very little advertising.
Do dogs and cats come with food specifications?
Yes, they do. Some of them are obviously very genuine. You know, they have kidney issues, so they're on a special kidney diet or something like that. I do, however, have one or two customers, well, a few more than one or two, that require that their animals be essentially, their dogs in particular, be fed a vegetarian type diet. Now,
and can you do that? Can you manage that?
Well, look, we have a standard feed, or a mixture of feeds that we provide for the dogs or the cats. But if people have a specific requirement, we will feed them what they want us to feed them, but they have to bring it along.
Got it.
You can
keep the dog separate to do that.
Oh, you're feeding with dogs in particular, especially large dogs, feeding is separate as the ideal, really. Yeah, so we monitor that. I mean, we dispense medications and all sorts of everything. We're a cross between an old people's home and a motel, really. That's how I see the business.
That's great. Gosh, what's the longest you've looked after a cat or a dog at one time?
Actually, we had a cat in for, at one stage, about 8.5 months. We've had dogs in quite often, at less so more recently, and this is partially due to COVID and the flow-on effects of that. But we regularly used to get dogs and cats in for 3 months or so when the cockies would go off on their OEs. They'd do Europe, you know, in the off-season and that type of thing. Not quite so much in recent years, but there's still the odd ones going away.
Good on you. What a great business. How marvellous. Oh, that's lovely to hear. Now, how did you get into politics in Winton, standing at the local board?
Well, mate, I got to the point a couple of years back where I just saw it that the enemy was at my gate. We operate on a property, a slap bang in the middle of farmland. It's outside of Winton Township, and our little piece of paradise, which I truly believe it is, 1 hectare, I just saw that everything was going wrong. And it came to a head with the likes of Three Waters, co-governance, which is Three Waters as well, largely, changes to the RMA, the introduction into legislation of agendas from outside of New Zealand that were being created by non-elected officials that were being forced onto me and my little piece. I genuinely felt that the enemy was at my gate, and there was very little I could do to stop it. I knew that I wasn't going to be a politician at a national level. Given the business that I run, I knew that I did not have the time to dedicate to stand for as a councillor. But I did think I would be able to make a valuable contribution at community board level.
Good for you.
The time constraints weren't so bad.
I feel the same. I feel as though the enemy is right at the gate, and I feel that they're coming for us, and I feel that our politicians are sock puppets for bigger agendas from the UN and international organizations. And lo and behold, they just tick the boxes and implement the policy and say it's their decision. I find that no one's taking responsibility for anything that's going on. And if you're a primary producer or worker or actually anyone that has to live in the marketplace, your local councils and central government are hell-bent on destroying you and your business.
Yeah. I probably, 2 years ago, before the local body elections, I probably was thinking that councils or local government was were the immediate enemies, because they were the ones who were sending me out my rates bills, and they were the ones who were, you know, starting to implement decisions that were affecting me, where I live and what I do. I have changed that position over the last 2 years because I've come to understand, like you alluded to, that local body, either at community board or at council level, are only implementing legislation. My disappointment with council is that there are so many elected representatives who either are just prepared to roll over. I believe some of them truly don't understand what the hell is going on. There is that level. There are also some very good people in councils who are genuinely trying to make a difference. But I guess the biggest bugbear that I have is that councillors and mayors included in that won't say no to the bullshit that's happening in the country. You know, there's no oomph, there's no energy there from councils that I see that are pushing back against central government. And central government, there's this thing going on at the moment where Simeon Brown is saying to, he's telling the local government sector to spend responsibly, don't spend unnecessarily, you know, stick to your knitting, so on and so forth. And yet, people are getting sucked in by this. He's coming out with the big stick, and yet he's the one who's sitting on top of all of the legislation that affects local government and that that directs them to do that kind of spending. That happened with the change in the local government act.
The councils are sort of almost, when you get elected, you must find you're on railway tracks.
Yeah.
Because the legislation puts you into this planning process and you're just sort of implementing. I remember when I looked at the legislation of local councils at one stage, I won't have the number exactly right, but there was 147 things that councils had to do as directed by central government. 147 things. And then, of course, central government puts on you this onerous planning process and all these onerous requirements. I visited one council at Wairoa on the east coast of the North Island. And I mean, literally, they had this big thing about their records. And it was the smallest or second smallest local district council in New Zealand. And they literally had their records in a broom cupboard. And I mean, the requirements for their records were to be like you're running Fonterra or the IRD, you know, computers and databases and backs up and Official Information Act requests and all this stuff. And it was just like a nice little council with their stuff in the broom cupboard doing the best they could. What shocked you? You got elected, so that was great. You put your name forward, deal to the enemy at the gate. Were there a group of you that stood?
On our particular, well, it wasn't a group that, in a sense, before the election, although there were clearly, in our ward anyway, a number of like-minded people that stood for election. And I guess you could say that has formed into a voting bloc on the council.
Yeah. And the local boards, that, as I understand them, they're at the behest of the council. So the council sets them up and gives them what responsibilities the council decides to give them. Is my understanding of that correct?
Yeah, very much so. And the makeup of boards is different across councils in New Zealand.
Yes.
In our case, for our board, because of the size of it, there are 7 elected members, community board members, and there is 1 appointed councillor who is appointed by the mayor to sit on the board, who has and full voting rights.
Yes, and they're from the Southland Council.
Yeah. I do know of an example over the border in the Clutha district where one of their community boards, and maybe more actually, they have 2 appointed councillors on their community boards. Mm. Now, the word is that that is done because not enough people in the community are standing for community board membership. I think it's a little bit more nefarious than that, and it is a way that the mayor of that particular district can control his boards.
Got it. Okay, we've got you. We've got you standing for the local board. Good for you. Then we've got this issue, which is blown up into a brouhaha of these damn cameras. I hate them. It looks like something to me out of that old movie Before You Were Born, that old TV show called The Prisoner, where Big Brother, that's right, Big Bloody Brother is watching you. And of course, they can be hidden and you not even know. And they're chilling. To me, they're chilling. And we know that they can be used now in nefarious ways. So that movie Enemy of the State, which we thought was sort of a bit sci-fi, now that's sort of passe, because we know that all the data can be being uploaded, can be being accessed, it can be facial recognition. And you're thinking, I actually just want to be able to walk down the street of Winton peacefully and not being secretly observed by who knows whom, right? And I feel the same way about my cell phone. I'm beginning to hate it. So walk us through the whole saga and how tortured it became and how toxic it became of these cameras. The floor is yours, Dave.
Okay. Well, firstly, the cameras proposed, as they are proposed now, are actually replacement cameras. The Township of Winton has had cameras since the early 2000s, and the current set of cameras, which have reached their use-by date, were actually the cameras that were used at Carisbrook before, when that shut down. We got them secondhand. Wow. So they've reached their end by date and they're looking to replace them. So the community is used to having the cameras there. The issue was to be addressed by the previous board, but they run out of time. So it got passed over at the election as an item for our new board to consider. Very briefly discussed that it was something that we'd have to look at and that it would come up in due course. It then came up in a workshop of May of last year that, we need to consider this now. And prior to that workshop, I knew that it was on the agenda. I prepared a document and I looked at it from, a business point of view to begin with. We were told initially that it was probably going to be a ballpark figure of $20,000, And to just so you're aware, Rodney, our board can only spend up to $20,000 without actually having to go to council. We, at that point, we need to then make a recommendation to council that they approve it and they rubber stamp the expenditure if it's over $20,000. So we were given this ballpark figure of 20 grand. Let's look at some cameras. So I thought, okay, 20 grand, a lot of money for our board. It's right at the top end. Let's put in a, like a, we need a business case for it to spend that amount of money. So I thought, well, the best way to do that then is to look at the effectiveness of the old cameras. What kind of results did they provide to the community? What sort of, you know, value did they add? And I did that because if I was making that a kind of expenditure in my business, that is the approach that I would take towards it, that I would, you know, justify it to myself before I spent the money. So hence I proposed a number, or put together a number of questions that were to, that I assumed and wanted to go to the police. And they were questions around basic stats, really, you know, how many offenders had been arrested with the old one, how many prosecutions had resulted from that, how many convictions, what type of crimes were they, you know, were there other kind of interventions, like perhaps youth were involved, what happened with them, you know, what referrals took place, you know, all of those kind of things that you would sort of expect the police would be able to collate and answer relatively easily for you. So that was kind of what I call stage one of my thinking about the cameras. The next step, which incorporated the cost aspect of them, the next stage was, if we had the right information supplied back to us and we were happy to proceed to the with the purchase, then what other issues were there around it? And to my mind, there were issues around security, and particularly in relation to the data once it's recorded. You know, and I mean, I've got a bit of technology, but I'm no geek. So my questions were around about security, you know, hackability of these cameras and so on and so forth, and how safe was your information when it was there. And anyway, I put this document forward, and at the a meeting the following month in June last year, a properly constituted board meeting, the local senior sergeant came along, Peter Graham, and he was given the opportunity to speak at the meeting, and he kind of discussed things in a general way, and I felt that he didn't sort of answer my questions sufficiently.
He was quite interesting, because I've read your documents most carefully, Dave. And he just didn't even think that he had to justify it, or it was just a rubber stamp and it was all, hey, your father. He wasn't prepared at all.
Well, I kind of think, and I've thought about this a little bit, I kind of think that an attitude came into this a bit like the old Kiwi, she'll be right, mate, type of attitude, where, you know, hey, we've done this in the past, yeah, we'll get them in again, you know, there's no real need to worry about this or worry about that. That was, I think that, yeah, that kind of mentality came into it. And maybe I was going a step beyond that and looking at things a little bit more seriously, perhaps, you know. So then nothing. Everything went quiet until December last year. And then, bang, it appeared on the agenda again, and it was included in, it was included with a whole lot of other stuff to approve in our 10-year plan. And we, as a board, we went to a little bit of effort to kind of separate it out of all of these other items. And we voted no for it because at that point I'd received no information back, certainly no written information back from the police. And I was no further ahead than what I was back in May when it was first discussed. So anyway, we voted it down. And
good on you. I love that. That's fair. That is so cool.
And at that point in time, when it happened, a chairperson of the board was absolutely frustrated, and his words were, after the vote was recorded, "You haven't heard the last of this."
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's a direct bullying threat.
I took it as the guy was pissed off, he didn't get his way, and he was going to do something to make sure that the issue didn't disappear. So Christmas came and went, and then we had a first board meeting in February. Prior to that, there was an article appeared in the newspaper based on a reporter getting in contact with the council over issues of bullying on the board. And that members were getting out of hand. Now, you will have read through that email that was sent anonymously to the Southland Times. In fact, it was sent much more widely than to the Southland Times, but they were the ones that took it up because it was a local story. Now, that's all rather interesting, that email. And I would like to state here openly that I know the author of it, who it is, or should I say authors, because there is more than one person involved in behind that email. I won't name them publicly. They are from a prominent family in the area. And they just need to know that not only I, but other members of the board and council know who is behind that. Nevertheless, it has an anonymous name. And they make some fairly wild accusations and some, I would say, slanderous comments in there directed at some of the board members, not in my case, not myself, but to other board members, with the accusations of bullying and, quite a number of other things. It's incredible. But the reporter played a funny game. He went to the council and asked them some questions about the bullying behaviour. Then he phoned us up individually, board members. And the game he played was that the council, the chief executive of the council, had contacted him. He made no mention to us of this email that he was sent. So what he created was a situation where I got very angry in our conversation because I believed that the CEO of our council had made an approach to the media about accusations of bullying on our board without having to come to the board to discuss it first. But he twisted it around, and that was to the detriment in some respects of all of this, because it got my back up quite badly with the kind of the twisting of the way that he did things. Following the accusations of bullying, he then came up with a story on the CCTV, and then it escalated in the community. The police sergeant was saying, "I provided an answer to you guys and all the rest of it," and I said, "Well, I've never seen it." And in fact, myself and another board member and the mayor went over to the police station to have a look at the existing setup that they had over there for the cameras. And at that point, on that day, which was in, I think, March this year, he held up a document and said, "Here is my reply to you." And I said to him, "I've never seen that before." He said, "Well, I gave it to the council." So this is where the incompetence, I guess, of the council steps in. You know, we had never been provided with that when we were asked to make a decision on it.
And that was information that you directly asked for.
Yeah, it was. It was.
And do you think it's incompetence, or do you think that they're just playing fast and loose with you?
Well, it's hard to tell, to be fair. You know,
that reporter is a
snake.
I was trying to think of a word. A snake will do. I was going to say toe rag, but that's old fashioned nowadays. That is absolutely a snake. Yeah. And funny enough, I can recall it being done to me. And what they'd do is they'd ring you up and they'd say, oh, Dave Dyack says that you're a lying little punk.
Yeah.
Not that exactly, but you know what I mean. And you'd say, well, I think Dave Dyack's a, you know, a snake. And then they'd ring up Dave Dyack and says, Rodney Hyde says you're a snake. Oh, well, I think Rodney Hyde. And they've got their story.
Yeah, yeah.
They are absolutely, once you've dealt with reporters, you have zero respect for them.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
And zero respect for the stories they write.
Yep. Yep.
But
very
of course,
much so.
We all read the news and we read it. And if it doesn't involve us, it sort of passes into our memory and into our minds and forms our opinions. And yet we don't realize how much we've been manipulated by, you know, some little 20-year-old snake.
Well, mate, I read the news these days and I look at it in a totally different light to the way that I would have 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen what they did over the last, particularly the last 5 years, and I have no respect at all for mainstream media. You know, I don't trust what they say. I'm, you know, there are obvious lies that they are writing and untruths and just misinformation, whatever you want to call it, you know. Mm. They're just a, you know, an arm of left-wing
so
Labour Party.
Where does it stand now? It's a stalemate, right? Because the council wants and the police want these cameras, but the board, despite the chairman's best efforts, have said no. So it's a stalemate on replacing the cameras.
Well, what was agreed to was that the council operations staff come back to us with a report and we would revisit the issue. Now, the council did that. They came back to us with a report, which in fact was valuable because it actually led me for the first time to really explore the Privacy Act and, you know, the issues, the Privacy Commission's website. And there was some really, really enlightening stuff on that website that reinforced, you know, my thinking around the issues over privacy, data security, so on and so forth.
I read that myself, thanks to you sending it to me.
Yeah.
And I mean, it had basic questions like, what is the purpose of these cameras?
Mm.
What are they to be used for? Who's going to be holding the data? Who's going to have access to the data? All basic stuff that to this day you haven't had answers to.
No, that's right. And I guess the key document was for me was a memorandum of understanding that was written in September 2022, and I'm just looking at it here as I'm talking to you, between the Southern District Council and the New Zealand Police with regard to the Winton CCTV cameras. Now, the date of that obviously goes back to the previous board, And it must have obviously been, the issue of privacy at least must have been considered to some degree, otherwise they wouldn't have created this memorandum of understanding. But I had a look at it and I thought, this isn't good enough. And then I looked into what a letter of memorandum of understanding was. And I thought, well, this doesn't even conform really to what a memorandum of understanding should be. And I actually took some legal advice on it and found out that it's completely worthless in the sense that it has no standing in a court of law. It's just rubbish. And when I looked into it, this is what it says. It's to acknowledge the understanding between the SDC, Southern District Council, and New Zealand Police in terms of administration of the data that is being recorded from the three CCTV cameras in the Winton Main Street. The SDC have installed and maintained the physical equipment at the locations indicated in the attachment. The equipment will remain the property of the Southern District Council. The New Zealand Police will have access to the data and the Winton office, and this will be managed in accordance with their crime prevention policy and in public places policy, specifically part 5, the Privacy Commissioner, the use of information collected and access to information. So the Southern District Council is basically saying, yep, we own the equipment, the police will look after all of the other hard stuff, and we don't have to worry too much. But then I started to put my quality auditor's hat on here and dig a little bit deeper into the police policies and the Southern District Council policies concerned. And to begin with, they don't align. They don't align about the retention of the data. The police says we will keep the data for X amount of time. The council says, well, we would keep data for, because they have their own policies on this, we would keep data for this amount of time. There is no accountability in this document. It doesn't state what will happen if things go wrong. So, say the data is hacked and some person, member of the public, decides to take legal action against it. Well, who's accountable? The police? The council? And my concern was, might it be the community board if we were the ones who approved the funding for it? So that letter is rubbish. It's toilet paper, literally. And the policies don't align. The Southern District website links to the Privacy Commission don't work. Now, that might be something really, really minor. It might be a glitch. In fact, it's not a glitch. The reason the links don't work is because the Privacy Commissioner is working on the policy as we talk, because there have been breaches up and down the country, including by the police, of the privacy data. So, it's a really, really messed up area at the moment. And what the council needs to do is to sit down, put some serious thought and effort into this and get it right. And I believe in particular with regards to the accountability of it, because I don't want to be signing off on cameras if 5 years' time somebody comes back and has a crack at me legally because I approved the camera installation and their data was hacked.
Isn't it extraordinary that you and your colleagues are doing everything expected of you, demanded of you, required of you as elected representatives? That is to say, you're questioning, you're saying, who's accountable for this circumstance? Who's responsible for this? Extremely reasonable, but questions that actually have to be answered. That you can't just wing this stuff. And yet you are being slandered and attacked by the mayor, the local papers, the business association, as the bad guys, conspiracy theorists down rabbit holes, including by the police.
Yeah.
It's weird, yeah, right? It's so strange, and up is down, night is day, black is white.
Yeah.
It's Orwellian. And it's particularly Orwellian, given that it's cameras that are going to be surveilling the people of Winton. I imagine Winton's got a population of what, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people?
It's about 2,500, yeah. Yeah.
And when you asked, they couldn't actually work out that the cameras had achieved anything.
Well, that's it. We didn't have any kind of results back on that, you know, quantifiable results.
Yeah, so, had the cameras. You've had the cameras all these years.
Yeah.
What, 20 years?
Yeah.
You've had the cameras for 20 years. How's it gone? Did they not climb crime on the head? Did you catch anyone?
Okay. The interesting thing is when you start to explore that Privacy Commission webpage, it clearly says that one of the outcomes of installing cameras should be that the police report back to the community on basically on the performance of the cameras. So, you know, it might be, I would imagine this is a pathway that we will probably follow as a board, is so that the repeat, and I think this is reasonable, the repeat, police would report back maybe twice a year on, you know, have there been any arrests? Have there, you know, how's it all going with the cameras? What are they doing? And this is all part of what the Privacy Commission says is good policy around cameras, so that you are open and transparent, and people's, particularly around the issues of privacy, their concerns are minimised. And one of the really, really interesting stats that I found on that Privacy Commission website is that 41, this is surveys that they have done, 41% of the people in this country have concerns around CCTV and their privacy. Now, those concerns no doubt are wide and varied, but 41%, and in particular, a very high level percentage of Maori people are very distrustful of CCTV. And yet, so you're talking about 4 out of 10 people here, probably more, because it's likely to be an issue that people won't even talk about much. You know, they're uncomfortable perhaps with it. So it's probably about 50-50, I would suggest. And you have a business association, a police, and others who are probably not saying it, who don't give a rat's about those people's concerns about privacy. All they are interested in is feeling safe. And I say feeling because they use those words, and because the data, or lack of it, that we've had back in terms of how effective the cameras are, you can only say it's to do with feelings. There is no real statistical information to base that on. They just feel safer. Well, what about the feelings of the people who are concerned about privacy? They want to dismiss them. You've seen that clearly in 2 or 3 places through this documentation. You know, it's their rights, for goodness sake. And yet, these people don't seem to want to be concerned about the rights of other people. It's their rights too, for God's sake. You know, can't they see that? We're actually trying to look after them.
Yes.
I've had experience about a privacy breach with my information between government departments through, as I'm sure you're aware, Rodney, there is that heads of agreement about data sharing between lots of government departments, including places like ACC, the police, ACC, Ministry of Social Development, you know, Inland Revenue as well. They're involved.
Absolutely.
In it, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And my data has, unfortunately, at one stage about 5 or 6 years ago, got mixed up with somebody else's. And it goes back to our earlier discussion about the Dyaks. It was a confusion of who was who.
I used to do IRD cases when I was a member of parliament, and I had two taxpayers who had the same name and I think the same birth date, and their tax records were intermingled.
Yeah.
And no one could make sense, because one would be getting one demand, one would be, you know, they didn't know each other.
No.
And everything was being, it was a total screw up. That's all by the by, but it's just reminded me of such a peculiar thing. These cameras, I saw in one document, am I correct, that they could be providing their data wirelessly?
There was a suggestion of going wireless with the system, largely because of cost. It's a lot cheaper to go wireless now than to maintain hard wire, you know, under the ground. Yes. And that type of thing. However, without a doubt, that puts the cameras at further risk of, you know, data being
hacked.
Yeah, hacked. Yeah.
What have you learned out of this, Dave?
Well, I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned in it. And I think you said earlier, you used the term microcosm of society, and I really think that's a good word to use. You know, I did make a couple of notes, you know, before we started, and some of the things that have come up in this is doxing, you know, media bias, a sense of entitlement. And what I mean by that is, in the more recent documentation about it, where there is going to, at this point in time, there's a community meeting planned. And in fact, there's even an overthrow of the community board planned. A prominent member of the community has organized somebody who will stand in, you know, in an acting chairperson's role and run things. And that really makes me laugh, because the person who is proposing that doesn't realize, you know, that she is actually going the opposite of democracy. She doesn't get what she wants, so let's put in somebody who will do what we want, and you know, toss the current elected lot out. It's getting to an insane level at the moment.
I found it particularly scary when the media started to come after who had signed your nomination.
Yeah, that is. It's pretty scary knowing that, you know, that type of thing is happening.
So what happened here for listeners is, when you stand for office, you need someone to nominate you. So you say, hey, Bob, can you put my name up for me to stand? Is it one or two that you need?
Who?
And they're on the roll, and they say, sure, I'd love you to stand. And they sign their name. And, of course, you'd normally think nothing of it. But the media started to try and chase down to report, no doubt adversely, on the people that had nominated the councillors, the board members, who were questioning the expense and issues around these cameras, actually chasing them, not dealing with the substance, not dealing with the issue, slandering the board members, and then coming after the people that had signed their nomination form. That is so dark and East German under the communist era regime stuff, isn't it?
Pretty crazy, yeah.
And, yep, of course, at the same time, without wanting to sound excessively conspiratorial, but this is the hoot of it. At the same time, they're saying, oh, trust us, trust them with the data. And you're saying, jeepers creepers, you're trying to hunt down, hunt the people that nominate people for the. I mean, you were democratically elected. The nomination is neither here nor there. People voted you in to do the job. You're doing the job. You're doing the job wonderfully. They can't stand it. Why? Because you're not falling into line. You're our Donald Trump.
No, I'm not Donald Trump. no, not at all. But, you know, when you make a comparison across what is happening, as you say, we're a microcosm. This type of stuff is happening in a lot of places. You know, I just really want to look after everybody's interests here, not just one segment of the community. You know, I can appreciate and understand that people feel safer with cameras there. Even though I fully understand too that the data doesn't actually show that they are. You know, the data shows that cameras won't prevent crimes from happening. There have been a number of crimes around the Winton area that have happened since this issue became, you know, public. And people have automatically jumped to the conclusion, oh, those cameras, you know, if we'd had cameras, it would have stopped those crimes. Well, no, it wouldn't, because in one case, the criminals actually, it was on a business property that had CCTV. They actually went up and destroyed or damaged the cameras so that the cameras couldn't see what they were doing. And we talked about it to the police sergeant afterwards, and he said, well, the new cameras would have only have helped if the criminals that did those particular crimes had happened to drive up onto the main street and been picked up by the cameras. Now, this happened on a street adjacent to the main street, and obviously they never drove it back up there, you know.
Because they're not stupid.
No. You know, so cameras don't really prevent crime. You know, if somebody's going to do it, they're going to do it. Just like I said, they put
and
the camera
cover,
out of
they
action.
They wear a balaclava, cover yeah, the... Yeah. Doing, it's not... Yeah. Well, Dave...
One of my really big concerns with this, Rodney, is... apart from all of that, is the what the cameras may or may not be used for in the future. Now, I'm aware enough to know that government legislation can be changed and the rules get changed on you. But I think there is a real opportunity, particularly with the letter of or the memorandum of understanding between the council and the police in the future. And again, it's recommended on the Privacy Commission website, where you have clearly stated purposes for the use of the camera. And you can define what they can and cannot be used for.
Yes.
And that is sorely lacking at the moment. And I have a few thoughts around that. And one of them is that they should never be used for any kind of revenue generation. Now, Winton, as you say, it's a small little town. We don't have parking meters out here. But that's not to say that in the future they might. So I don't believe they should be used for any kind of revenue generation or anything like that. I further don't believe that they should be used for any restriction in movement of people or of vehicles of any type. And who's not to say that in the future, as we know, it's well documented in the UK, they're going ahead with ULEZ or ultra low emission zone places, and they are restricting vehicle movement based on that. And, you know, they are fining people if they have an environmentally unfriendly vehicle and that sort of thing. So, you know, we've got to define this. When it comes to facial recognition, when can and when should that be used? And in my view, it should only be used in direct relationship to identifying an offender to a crime that has been committed. And the same with regards to number plate recognition. So you can put up the cameras, and all of the cameras these days pretty much are capable of doing those types of things, facial recognition, number plate recognition. But let's make sure that the software is not, because it's the software that runs the cameras, let's make sure that the software isn't actually doing that. The data, you know, in my view, it must only ever be stored in New Zealand and not offshore, which is happening with, you know, the large-scale implementation
of
this. And also, for example, in our case, because of the hacking issues, you could create a system whereby your cameras record to a standalone computer so that it is in no way connected to the internet.
Yep.
And that way it cannot be hacked.
And gets wiped every month.
Whatever, yeah. Yeah. But you've got to physically state that before those types of actions will happen. Otherwise the she'll be right approach will kick in and we'll just do whatever's easiest, you know. And I don't think those types of things are in the too hard basket. I don't think they're too unreasonable. And I think they will go a hell of a long way to allaying the people's who are concerned about their privacy, and will go a long way to allaying their fears.
Well, Dave, I salute you, sir, and to your colleagues. I wish you were my representative, because I feel with you we've got a good man, and we've got a man that takes his responsibilities seriously. It's a sad day in New Zealand that when an elected representative is discharging their duties in a correct and proper manner, that they are the ones that come in for the attacks and the slander. And of course, that's designed to deter good people and people to question. And it explains why so many of our elected representatives are just ciphers, absolute ciphers. I'm coming to a very sad conclusion about the state of our democracies across the West. I've wondered why they're so hard against Trump. And I think I realize what it is. He's an outsider. And he doesn't play by the government games. He's like, in a large scale, he's like Dave Dyke in Winton. And the other thing is, I don't think he can be blackmailed. Because everything that he's done badly, they've already thrown at him. And they can't control him. And I imagine the political leaders in Washington, D.C., all have a file on them. And I'd never appreciated things like this before. But it's hard to explain all the compliance. And of course, basically in New Zealand, there's a narrative that runs. And if you're a mayor and you run with your chief executive and you run with the staff and you run with the story, everything's good and you get elected again. Buck the system. And doesn't matter the issue. Cameras in Winton, doesn't matter. You're bucking the system. Make an example of them. That's no longer a democracy. And that's why I salute you so much, Dave. And this is why I love the story. Because here's a little town and New Zealand a beautiful little town. There's a man there with a hectare of paradise in his business. And he felt the enemy at the gate. And he decided to stand up and fix it. That's the most admirable thing. And you are doing that. So stick at it, Dave. And there's a lot of people in New Zealand listening to the show. We're all rooting you on. And we wish we had the courage of our convictions to do what you're doing with your colleagues. Because it can't be easy.
No, Rodney, it's, you know, like I say, we've had some moments. But we will continue this.
You continue this. And you drop me a note and we'll get you back on to keep us abreast of it, because we want the man with the business and the hectare of paradise who's standing up for what's good and just to win. And we want to support you. So you keep us apprised and come back on, and we're looking forward to your victory.
It's great to know, great to hear you say those words, which I probably hadn't really considered before. I mean, I know I've got support here amongst some friends and people that I know, but to hear you talk about it on a larger scale, that not only yourself, but the listeners who, yeah, I guess I hadn't considered.
This is right through New Zealand.
Yeah.
Dave Dyack, board member. The Ōrite Community Board, based around Winton, under the Southland Council, standing up to those insidious cameras. Funny enough, not opposing the cameras outright, just basic questions. What are they for? How's the data going to get used? We're paying for them. The police gets to use them. How does that work? How have the cameras worked for the last 20 years? No proper answers, no proper reports. He's actually just doing what the Privacy Commissioner says should be done. As a matter of course, the Privacy Commissioner, paid for by us, the taxpayers, to advise the government on privacy. And the council doesn't care. He asked a question that the Privacy Commissioner says should be answered as a matter of course. You slandered an attack and the local media is set on you and people start writing anonymous complaints to the media and to the mayor slandering you. It's extraordinary. We're going to stick up for these guys because we're New Zealanders with a great sense of justice, and we admire people with guts who stand up for what's right. You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde, and that was a real talk. Send us a text at 2057. Email me at inbox@realitycheck.radio. I always say that we're blessed with our guests and we're blessed with our listeners. Well, truly, at times we're blessed by our elected representatives and we're blessed by Dave Dyack to be standing for council and be standing up for what's right. Thank you so much for listening.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.